Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. The U.S. Congress is considering a measure that would help tribes institute Amber Alert systems to help protect children from abductions. It provides grants to tribes that don't already have emergency public alerts when a child goes missing. But parents, Native communities, and law enforcement officials face additional challenges for preventing and responding to missing children. We'll hear about the latest efforts to address missing children right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans in Michigan protested the docking of replica Christopher Columbus ships in Traverse City Wednesday. Citizens of the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians planned a peaceful protest as a way to educate the public about Native American genocide. The Maritime Heritage Alliance arranged for two ships to visit the city as part of a tour in a number of ports across the country. Local television news stations report a number of people took to both land and water, some in canoes, to show opposition of the ships. The ships are scheduled to remain docked in Michigan through next week. A coalition of tribal representatives, conservationists, business owners, and others are speaking out over what they say is the value of national monuments. The push comes a week before Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is scheduled to release his recommendations on the fate of at least 17 national monuments across the country at the direction of President Trump. During a conference call with reporters, Fawn Douglas, a member of the Las Vegas Paiute tribe, says the designation has helped protect Gold Butte National Monument in Nevada.
The Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes, along with other conservation groups and other tribes around the southern Utah and Arizona area, have worked together, you know, for years to get this designation in place. This was a step in the right direction for the government to listen to the voices of the indigenous peoples and to work with the other people. You know, we all had a common goal, and that's land conservation.
Obama designated the monument in December of last year at the request of tribes and others who were concerned about vandalism of petroglyphs and the destruction of other archaeological treasures. Tribal leaders in North Dakota are meeting with Governor Doug Burgum. The governor and other state officials traveled to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Tuesday. Tribal and state leaders signed a memorandum of understanding during the meeting. It directs state and tribal authorities to coordinate on elk management and law enforcement efforts within the boundaries of the reservation. State leaders also recently met with the Mandan Hidatsa Narikara Nation in Newtown to discuss a number of issues with tribal leaders, including water, law enforcement, and taxes. Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this month. The nonprofit is located on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And as Jim Kent reports, community involvement is key in creating change and opportunities for Lakota people.
Those are pretty lofty goals for any group to have, especially in an area that's regularly listed among the poorest places in America. But Thunder Valley spokesperson Cecily Engelhardt advises other tribal communities that the only way to make an impact on a difficult situation is to think big.
Every community is going to have different priorities. So our advice is to tap into your local voices and local talent to see what you can even dream up for the future and then figure out how to achieve your goal. Because if you look at it as, well, we don't have the money or we don't have the resources, then you're never going to fulfill the full capacity of your community. You have to dream big and then figure out how you're going to reach that goal.
Over the past 10 years, Thunder Valley's big dreams have brought Lakota students their language through immersion programs, created a geothermal greenhouse, community gardens, and established a home ownership program. The group has also built 7 of 21 single-family homes planned for its regenerative community that will include powwow grounds, an art gallery, a farmer's market, and a fitness center. A couple of restaurants are also on the board to draw visitors to the community. The ultimate goal, notes Engelhardt, is to continue creating sustainable programs that will empower Lakota youth and families to improve their health, their culture, and their environment. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. The father of 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike, who was abducted and murdered last year, is suing the Navajo Nation for not having an emergency alert system in place at the time. He says timely notification from the Amber Alert system could have saved his daughter's life. The murder prompted the tribe to start an emergency alert system. It also inspired Arizona Senator John McCain to introduce a bill to expand the Amber Alert system in Indian Country. But immediate notification isn't the only obstacle when it comes to protecting children. In this hour, we're going to hear about additional hurdles, including jurisdiction agreements, lack of resources, and limited access to criminal databases. We also want to hear from you. What concerns do you have as a parent or a grandparent or even a community member about how your Native community and tribe would respond if a child goes missing? The phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us in the studio is Miski Yatsati. She's a volunteer advocate for missing persons, and she's Navajo, Potawatomi, and Mixteca. Welcome, Miski.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Also joining us from Llano, Texas, is Janet Franson. She's the founder of Lost and Missing in Indian Country. She's also a retired homicide investigator, and she works cold cases for Williams County, for the Williams County Sheriff's Office. Welcome to Native America Calling, Janet.
Thanks for having me.
Janet, let's start with you. You started a group called Lost and Missing in Indian Country. Tell us a little bit about why you started this group.
Well, even after I retired from law enforcement, I've been involved in missing persons and homicide cases for about 35 years. And when I was working at one time with the National Missing Persons System, I became aware of the fact that there weren't very many missing Native Americans listed on the National Missing Persons site. They just weren't, nobody was getting the information to put them on the site, so that means nobody's looking for them. So when I realized that there was a problem, I started entering them myself, and the National Missing Persons site back in 2014, in November 2014, only had 83 people listed ethnically as Native American that were on the missing person site. Out of that 83, I entered 53 of them in myself. And in NCIC, the National Crime Information Network computer, there were 1,360 people identified as Native American that were missing. But regular people don't have access to NCIC. That's only for law enforcement. So there was a big disparity of the numbers as far as how many people were missing and how many people were actually getting reported missing and follow-up being done on them.
Why do you think that disparity was happening and is?
There's probably a bunch of different causes of it, but one of the things that I've noticed in Indian Country that makes it very difficult is trying to figure out who actually owns a case. If it's a missing Native that goes missing out in the county or in a town or municipality, then that agency would normally take possession of the case and work it. When you have it happen on tribal lands, it gets very, very confusing as far as, is it a local tribal police? Is it BIA? Is it the FBI? Who actually owns this case? And it's real difficult to figure that out.
Yeah, jurisdiction in Indian country is something that we're all aware of, the many issues that go on with jurisdiction. We're talking about missing children today in particular. If you want to weigh in on this conversation, share something, give us a call. The phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Janet, you mentioned that it's hard to know who is responsible for this in these circumstances, especially when it's on the reservation, if a child goes missing. Off of the reservation, if a child goes missing, who is generally responsible for it anyway? I mean, when you watch TV shows or movies, it always seems like the FBI is swooping in and taking control of the situation.
Not normally, not usually, unless it is something that goes across jurisdictional boundaries or state boundaries. Normally, if a child goes missing, the law enforcement agency that is the closest one there, if they live in town, it could either be, say it's Tucson, it could be the Tucson Police Department, or if they live out in the county, it could be I think that's Pima County, Sheriff's Office. So there's two possibilities right there. Then, if they actually go missing on the reservation, it falls back on Native American law enforcement. Usually the FBI doesn't get involved unless they believe it to be a foul play case. And initially, unless somebody sees somebody snatching a child, you know, it's assumed that they've gone playing with somebody and they forgot to come home, or maybe they're a runaway, whatever. And it doesn't seem to be very high priority on law enforcement's list as far as looking for a missing child. And it should be number one on everybody's list.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. And I want to throw that out there for our listening audience. Have you had a child go missing in your tribal community? What was the response? Did you see jurisdictional issues? Give us a call. The number again is 1-800-996-2848. You mentioned, you know, that when a child goes missing, a lot of the circumstances, or the people think that it's, well, they ran off on their own, or they're playing or something like that. And Janet, I'm just curious, you know, that is generally, when we look at the overall statistics, the amount of stranger abductions of children is actually very low. So is that why police are not paying attention when kids go missing as much?
I think that that's one of the reasons. If you have a child go missing, you have a much higher probability of that child being, if the child has indeed been taken, being taken by a non-custodial family member than a stranger. Now, that's not to say that because a non-custodial family member takes their child and runs off that it's okay. They can be just as much in danger being taken by a non-custodial parent than they can be a stranger, because there's a reason that the courts took away the possession of their child from them. And you may not know that right away, but, you know, we all hear about the stories, which Ashlyn's story, you know, was just horrible. It was a stranger danger kind of a case, but as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter whether they were kidnapped by a non-custodial parent or by a stranger. They can be, you know, imminently in danger regardless.
We're talking about missing children today. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. 248. Let's take a call. We've got Mike in Buffalo Springs, New Mexico, tuned in on KGLP. Hey there, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Ben. I just wanted to share with the people that the tragic events that took Ashley and Mike's life was unnecessary and unwarranted. And blame can go around all the way around, not only just the Navajo Nation, but it's the families too. Because every day I see and I hear and I observe family members either walking across county lines, state lines, or whatever, to attend Gallup schools or to attend Tehachapi High School, and they live in San Juan County. And these kids are unsupervised, unattended, and unescorted. And it kind of leaves the door open for something like this, something this tragic to happen. And that falls on the fault of the parents. And it shouldn't have to be that way. They're responsible for their kids. And when they put their kids' lives in jeopardy, somebody needs to be held accountable for it, not just the child, but the parents also. And the Navajo Nation has neglected for years to do something about this. They would rather spend $23 million on a stinking ranch instead of looking at improving the Amber Alert system. They already wasted $300,000 that was appropriated for this Amber Alert system a couple of years ago, and now they're standing in line waiting for another handout.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for giving us a call from Buffalo Springs, New Mexico, tuned in on KGLP. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about missing children today, missing when children go missing. Do you get an Amber Alert on your phone, or do you live in an area that does not receive Amber Alerts? And would you like to see that change in your community? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. What could your local tribal leaders do to make sure children are safe? What could they do to make sure missing children investigations go quickly and smooth? We want to hear from everybody. It's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Miski Yatsiti is with us here in the studio. She is a volunteer advocate for missing persons. And you started a few groups, Miski, of missing people. Tell us a little bit about these groups.
Back in, let's say, May of 2013, you know, I came across a lot of these groups, like the SWAP group and, you know, local community groups, posting about missing children, missing adults. And it brought to my attention that there's really nothing there for the Navajo Nation. And most of the time that I seen the post, they were Navajos. And so I decided to do a little research. I went and looked, and, you know, I really didn't come across anything to do with, you know, missing Native Americans until I came across Janet's page. And, you know, when I looked through her page, I seen quite a few of the Navajos listed on there, which I didn't see in a NAMIS database. So from there, I decided to start the page called Navajo Nation Missing Persons Updates. And just recently started the Missing Persons of the 21 Pueblos. And, you know, at first I was just sharing posts, and now we're making the missing persons flyers. And again, recently, back in June, we decided to try and do start a turquoise alert, similar to an Amber Alert. It's unofficial. You know, the parents just have to get a hold of us, message us, and let us know what's going on, if it's an abduction or an endangered missing child. And within minutes, we can send out that alert. And, you know, hopefully, it's small right now, but hopefully that will catch on and, you know, temporarily until, you know, the Amber Alert gets, you know, started.
So you're really looking to, you're at these deficits that we have in our communities because of whether it's red tape, mm-hmm. with politicians, you know, with getting laws passed and things like that, and using social media to just jump over that.
Yes, definitely. Social media is just our number one friend right now. You know, you can post it, and within minutes, it's all over. you know, you can post from, let's say, Albuquerque, and within a minute it's out in Texas, it's out in Canada, you know, people will see it. And, you know, that's really how effective it is by using social media, especially Facebook, because that's where our pages are located. And, you know, it's helped. It is extremely helpful. And if you use it correctly, you know, it will work.
And the turquoise alert is specifically for missing Native children.
Yes.
What would it visually look like if you have an alert show up on the Facebook page?
It will show on our Facebook page, but it gets sent out through mobile devices.
Oh.
And emails. And, you know, we are only allowed to do 100 characters, but, you know, just regular Amber Alert, just like an Amber Alert. But we named it Turquoise Alert.
So if you just sign up for this with your phone number, then you'll get the alert.
Yes.
And where can people find out about that?
You can visit our Facebook page. It's all you got to do is go up to the search bar and type in Navajo Nation Missing Persons Updates. And there's all the information that you need to know right there. And if you have any questions, you can message us.
And to sign up for it, do you have like a form, or is it just message you and add your number?
No, actually, on our Facebook page, there's a little icon button that says sign up, and it'll lead you right to the link.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Well, we are talking about missing children today, and Miski Yatsati just shared with us about her own Amber Alert system that she set up for missing Native children called the Turquoise Alert. You can learn more about it on her Facebook page, which is Navajo Nation Missing Persons Updates. She also started the Missing Persons of the 21 Pueblos Facebook group. And we want to hear from you. If you want to share something, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to the phones. We've got Valerie in Shiprock, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Valerie.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to share today?
I just like to share about the tragic accident of Ashley Mike, because I live there in the Four Corners, and it was just, for me, I was very upset because you have the Navajo Nation police, you have the federal police, and when this incident happened, they didn't react in a time that they should have. And, you know, this should never happen anywhere, but I just feel like the law enforcement on the Navajo Nation, they need to be more professional, they need to have training, and they need to have this Amber Alert, you know, for all the children on the Navajo Reservation, because they always promote, you know, protecting children, and the children are our future. And that's one of the main things they do during the Navajo Nation Fair. But, you know, they speak about it, but in actions, they're lacking it. They're not protecting our children, because if they say that they are our future, then how are they? What are they doing right now to protect them? And as you've seen, they're not doing nothing. It's just
right.
It's a situation that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, Valerie, I'm curious. Have you reached out to like your council delegate or to the Navajo Nation to express these feelings?
Yes, I have, and I've also written to the Navajo Nation our Daily Times that comes out every Thursday, and they have not responded to any of the issues I have concerns for, like my nephews and nieces, and it got no response. And I'm not surprised, because, you know, you vote for these people to protect you, to improve the community, you know, to help your own people, but you vote for them and they just don't help. They just turn away and get caught up in their political system.
Valerie, thanks so much for giving us a call from Shiprock, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. And there's time for you to get in on this conversation as well. We're talking about missing children. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I want to bring another voice into the conversation right now. Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Jim Walters. He's the program administrator for the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. Welcome to Native America Calling, Jim.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Jim, tell us a little bit about the Amber Alert system in Indian Country.
Back in 2006-2007, the Department of Justice ran a pilot project to implement Amber Alert in Indian Country. The problem then and now was that if you were, say, in Albuquerque and your child was abducted and law enforcement responded, then you had access to all of those resources that come with an Amber Alert. But if you went right down the freeway and you were in Laguna or Acoma or Navajo, those resources weren't there. So the idea was to bring the same types of resources and the education that comes with it, the training that comes with it, to tribal communities around the country so that you could have the same ability to rescue a child in a timely manner, as Janet spoke about, when they go missing from a tribal community. And that's part of the legislation that you mentioned. It's a further effort to expand that so that all tribes around the country have access to those types of resources.
So is it a question of, in Indian Country, we have terrible cell phone reception in many places. Sometimes you have to crawl to the top of a hill to get your phone to work and things like that. Is that what we're talking about here? Because my experience with the Amber Alert is that it shows up on my phone and maybe later I'll see it on the news or something like that. Is that what the problem is? Is that, we just have bad reception?
That is what you see on the face of it, but it goes much deeper. And there are a lot more resources that are available to the tribe or to tribal police when an Amber Alert is issued. We do deal with a problem in Native communities around the country and in Alaska of connectivity, that ability to simply make a call, and that's something that most, people in cities and counties around the country don't experience. But what we also deal with is the fact that when you issue an Amber Alert, say in Albuquerque, and there are resources from the state and from the federal government that come to bear on that. There are a lot of moving parts behind the scene. Let's say when you put out the alert, you're very often flooded with calls and leads and information. And what we found from past cases is that if you don't manage that correctly, you could lose vital information in the first hours.
Jim, hang on. We want to talk more about this after the break. We're talking about missing children in Indian Country today. If you've got something that you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll be right back. Obesity rates for Native American and Alaska Native children remain higher than the national average, according to the Indian Health Service. But a new study shows that rates are leveling off. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about what's working and what else is being done to address childhood obesity. Please join us.
Gan kamoyek, ka
Support by nonprofit community lender Acción, providing small business loans to help strengthen local economies of New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and Texas. Acción works with entrepreneurs growing or just getting started with an easy application process and personalized one-on-one support. 9% interest loans available through the end of August. More at us.accion.org or by calling 800-508-7624. Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Today we're talking about missing children in Indian Country. We're learning about the reality of missing children cases, that stranger abductions are among the least likely scenarios. We're hearing from law enforcement and policy perspectives, but when children go missing, it also takes a toll on families and communities. Is there enough support to help people address the trauma of missing children? Join our conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before the break, we were talking with Jim Walters. He's the program administrator for the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. Jim, you were talking about the barriers to getting Amber Alert fully into Indian Country. Go ahead and finish what you were sharing.
Yes, you know, some of the barriers that we face are what we see on the face of it, the communication shortages, the infrastructure needs, the ability for tribes around the country to connect to these justice information systems so that they can load the information regarding that the missing child into systems that can be broadcast. And there's also the support network of the case analysis, phone banks and things of that nature that historically tribes have not had access to. And that's what the Amber Alert program is designed to do, is to help them obtain those resources, partner with their state Amber Alert plans, their regional Amber Alert plans, or develop programs in their communities that fit the needs of that specific community. And you know, Amber Alert needs are different tribe to tribe, wherever you're at. And so it has to be an effort to look at each case individually and develop a system that works for that tribe. And unfortunately, until that happens, community members and tribal law enforcement are not working with all the tools that they need if a child goes missing.
Interesting. Well, let's take a call. We've got Jonathan in Rocky Boy, Montana, joining us from KHEW. Hey there, Jonathan. Thanks for waiting. What would you like to share?
Hello there. How are you doing today? This is Jonathan Windy Boy. I'm a state representative for the state of Montana, and this issue was brought to my attention. I just wanted to give a little update of what Montana is doing. I also serve as the chairman of the State Tribal Relations Interim Committee, and this is one of the issues that was raised as part of our working plan in the next 2 years by my vice chairman, Alan Doan, who is a Republican representative and also the majority whip. And what we have numbers of codes that are in place that address some of this issue. But we wanted to take a look at this, and we put this as part of our work plan here. And the Amber Alert that the Department of Justice in Montana was established in 2003, and what we want to do is we wanted to raise this issue even more so, because this has become a huge issue. And taking cue from what's going on in Canada, that this is also is an issue that not only has been raised here in the United States, but also in Canada. And there are And what we're doing with this study is we're trying to see what we can do to identify what's needed, and if there's anything that we need to streamline as far as having committee bills for our next legislature here is definitely going to be a priority for the committee.
Representative Wendy Boyd, let me ask you, do you know if the Amber Alert system is implemented on any of the reservations in Montana, Fort Peck, Rocky Boy, Northern Cheyenne, anything like that?
Well, I know Rocky Boy has moved forward, and because I've been out of the tribal politics scene here, I'm not too sure. But that is, if it isn't happening, it's one of the things that we want to make sure that we're doing is that we're partnering with the tribes, because the relationships with the state and the tribes have been kind of it's not to where I would hope it would be, because a lot of times that's the first piece of identification that people say is state, tribes, and people right away ask, well, this is state. Why do we have to deal with the state? But my issue is, my first question is, well, the moment that you drive off that reservation line there, whose jurisdiction are you in?
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to try to get this relationship even stronger, especially in this area.
Have you thought much about the role that racism plays when it comes to missing children in Montana?
Definitely. I mean, it does play a role. I mean, as part of, in our state alone, there is a huge number of segregation groups that has been, and the thing about it, around 2009, 2011, because of the race relations that Montana in general and law enforcement in general has been a profile issue, and that's why I got an anti-profiling law in place to prevent that, because that was one of the items that even the police had to get rid of was a quota system, and the police did have to mark that off, that that race was a part of that, that they need to set a certain amount of vehicles to pull over as part of that quota, whether it be 20 a day or whatever, and that automatically just raises the issue that race has become a part of that. So we deal with it here.
Well, Representative Wendy Boyd, thank you so much for giving us a call today from Rocky Boy, Montana. Where can folks learn more about this study that you want to do?
You can go onto the mt.gov page, and then the state website is pretty much self-explanatory, and you can also go onto the DOJ. mt.doj.gov website that has this, and then there's also when you get onto the mt.gov on the legislature portion of it, and then you look up the State Tribal Relations Interim Committee Working Progress. This 10-page updated report will be on that, and highlights of what we're doing from here on out.
All right. Thanks again for giving us a call. We really appreciate it. And if you still want to get in on the conversation, there's plenty of time. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. What is the status of missing children in your community? We want to hear from you. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Jim Walters is with us, and he is the program administrator for the Amber Alert Training and Technical Assistance Program. Jim, how is it determined that an Amber Alert needs to be called? Is there a set of, 10 criteria? And I'm also curious then, have folks ever commented that the criteria for these Amber Alerts is actually, getting in the way of putting them out?
Yeah, there are criteria, and the criteria are pretty basic. in terms of the law enforcement agency that receives the report has to determine that an abduction has occurred. The alerts are for children, so it would be for 17 or under. And you need information that would allow you to search for the child or the suspect. So some sort of information as to descriptions and things of that nature. And one of the areas that we've always ran into problems with tribal agencies is that that information also needs to be entered into the NCIC system, that National Crime Information Computer System that Janet talked about, and tribes traditionally have had difficulty accessing that system. Now, that said, there have been calls for changing of the criteria or that the criteria were too restrictive, but something that's really important is to understand that there are tools for when it's not an Amber Alert, and programs like Facebook and social networking and the work that Janet and Miski do are what we call secondary distribution networks. So you put all of the same investigative efforts into a missing child, whether it qualifies for an Amber Alert or not, and that includes using things like social networking or tribal alert systems and so forth to get that word out. But the Amber Alert criteria are kept very specific so that we don't overload the public with alerts and they lose interest or they don't pay attention to the alerts that they're receiving.
Because if a child is abducted, that is like the highest priority of a situation because of statistics that say about children abductions. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. We know that studies have shown that in those cases where a homicide is the outcome, in 76% of those cases, the child is killed within the first 3 hours of the abduction. And so time is absolutely our enemy. And as the representative said, especially with tribal communities, it's very possible that that suspect is moving off of tribal lands with the child. And so we have to shut that down and try to prevent the movement of that child as quickly as possible. And that's all goes back to getting resources in the field quickly.
All right. Thanks for that. Let's take another call. We've got Joyce in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Hello, Joyce. What would you like to share today? Hi.
Hi. My granddaughter is missing, and I saw her face come on Facebook, but she had a different name. And so I alerted the Rosebud police because her mother's from Rosebud. My son's from Pine Ridge, where Ogallala, so I called there, and I talked with CPS, the Child Protection Services, but nobody cares.
Joyce, I'm sorry to hear that, but thank you so much for giving us a call and sharing that information. Miski, I imagine you encounter circumstances like this where family members are reaching out to you and really, you know, in anguish about their missing family members.
Yes, I get several of them. And I do as best as I can to get them to calm down, because most of the time they're you know, how would you say it?
Upset.
Yes,
yeah,
they are. And,
of course, understandably.
So, and then I try to get the description. You know, it's really important to get the description so I can make the flyer. Because as soon as I make the flyer, I actually like to send out the alert. And in, you know, the caller's case right now, you know, a lot of the times they do try to get a hold of police departments and other places. And, you know, they do get pushed to the side. And it's really sad that it happens like that. And that's where I like for us to come in and try and help. You know, the flyers on social media really do help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Janet, I wanted to know, you know, do you have anything you'd like to add about just the role that advocates play in investigations? Anything you'd like to share about that?
Well,
The one thing that I want to say is that everybody should get a hold of Miski, because she's taken the bull by the horns. She hasn't waited for some agency to conduct a study or bring it up on next year's budget or agenda or whatever. You know, you have to take control of the situation. You have to help yourself. And Miski has done that, which I think is incredible. You know, there are plenty of good stories and bad stories. Somebody else that did a really good job last year, there was a little four-year-old girl named Macy Lilly that was abducted up in Wolf Point, Montana. And everybody did everything so right and so fast. I mean, they took it seriously. Sometimes law enforcement goes, oh, well, it's just a kid that's run away or whatever, and they really don't take it seriously. But the Roosevelt County Sheriff's Office and the tribal officials, everybody worked together, and they helped create a miracle. That little girl was found still alive, and they not only found her alive and saved her, they captured the bad guy. And so, you know, I would think that somebody would want to go up there or get on the phone and talk to those people and say, you did it. You did it right. Tell us what you did so we can do better, so we can improve what we're doing. And the other thing is being your own advocate. The squeaky wheel gets the grease theory. If you sit back and you wait for somebody else to do it, chances are it's not going to get done. You have to take a proactive approach. Most family members, parents, whatever, they're not law enforcement individuals, but nobody would know them better, you know, their child than them. Mm-hmm. And so they have to remain a very vocal advocate in staying on law enforcement and pushing them to get things done. The one thing that Miski and I briefly talked about that I think is a great idea is something proactive you can do. Don't wait until your child goes missing. And there are several organizations, I think, that make up these kits. You have an event, a public event. You make sure that there's a recent photograph, facial photograph, taken of your child. You fingerprint them, and you take a DNA swab. And they can actually take the DNA swab, put it in a container in a nice, cool place, and save it themselves as a parent. But a lot of times different agencies will put on these types of events. I think that would be a wonderful thing for somebody to do, not only in Navajo land, but anywhere throughout the United States on these reservations, that you get information on these children, you get things like DNA, a picture of them so you can have a good picture to look at them, and fingerprints.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. Janet, I'm curious, you know, your former law enforcement, and you mentioned the importance of advocating for family members need to be advocating, they need to be on law enforcement. In Indian country, I mean, we do have several experiences or many experiences of folks not getting along with the police that well. And so what advice do you have for interacting with the police, particularly in a situation like this where emotions are high, where tensions are high, where there might be blame going around? What is the best approach?
Well, blame isn't going to get anything done. That's totally negative. It's counteractive. You know, if you have a missing child, whoever the investigator is, and you need to immediately, as soon as you can, once the report's been made and everything, you need to identify who your investigator is going to be. Now, in some cases, in smaller agencies or whatever, That may be a uniformed police officer as opposed to an investigator or detective. But it doesn't matter. You need to make friends with your investigator instead of, you know, well, my mom used to say you get more flies with sugar than you do vinegar. You need to let them know that you're there to help them on anything that they might need regarding their missing child, and you need to let them know that, I'm going to check in. I'm going to see is there anything that needs to be done that hasn't been done, anything I can help you with to get information, more information on the missing child or whatever. But, attitude is everything. And I really think that, if you kind of take the high road and say, I'm not bothering you. I'm here because this is my missing child. And if it was your missing child and the roles were reversed, what would you want me to do?
Yeah.
And I think anybody who has been a parent would tell you, you want the earth, the moon, and the stars moved, and you want it yesterday. And you just have to be there. You have to stay in touch with your law enforcement agency, whether it's a city, municipality, or a county, or tribal police, or BIA, whoever. You need to make sure that you've got the information on that law enforcement contact and that you stay on them. Not being, ugly, but that I'm here, and I'm here until, we find out what happened to my missing child.
Yeah. Janet, thanks for sharing that. Let's add one more call to the conversation. We've got Pamela in California. Hi there, Pamela. What would you like to share?
Good morning, everybody. I just want to say thank you for everybody that's been out there supporting trying to get the Amber Alert in Indian countries implemented. It's been a really hard process. And just as a mother and having your daughter or children, being kidnapped and missing, it, one of the scariest experiences that a parent can have. And this is new to me, advocating as a parent. Before this happened to my daughter, I was in the medical field. But just with all of the things that happened in trying to locate my daughter and not finding her in time, just brought about awareness to me that there's changes that need to happen on the reservations, not just the Navajo reservation, but a lot of others around the United States. And so I started to advocate, just right away after my children were missing, wondering, what is law enforcement doing? And then realizing that there's, they need a lot of training and stuff, and, funding and stuff like that is not available for them. So I actually started advocating and going around and trying to bring about awareness because I don't want another parent to experience what I've gone through. So I just wanted to call in to say, it's really important to me, and it makes me so happy.
Pamela,
make this happen, trying to make it go through legislation.
Yeah, Pamela, and I should let our listeners know that you are Ashlyn Mike's mother. Thank you so much for calling us and sharing your experience with us today. And, anything else that you would like to add about these efforts to look for missing children, whether it's using social media or anything like that?
Yes. Since we didn't have the Amber Alert established on the reservation, on the Navajo reservation, I actually went to social media because that was the only way that I could get my word through and try to have people or the community come together as fast as possible. But unfortunately, it wasn't fast enough. So it's just really imperative that we get this established. It's really important to me. It means a lot.
Pamela, thank you so much for giving us a call from California and for listening in today. We really appreciate it. And our thoughts are with you and your family. We're about close to the end of the hour. Ms. Key, I want to give you a moment to share anything else about why you are diving into this and share and working to help find missing people.
Well, the number one reason is, you know, when this happens, you know, it devastates a family, and it's so important that we find them. You know, the first 24 hours, the first 48 hours are so extremely important. And, you know, the time is of the essence when they go missing. And whether it's a child or a missing adult or a missing elder, you know, we have to be diligent about getting the word out. You know, and that's what I aim to do, is get these flyers, get these alerts. You know, they may not be official, but they will help. You know, it's a small alert system, but, you know, my mission is to help. And that's exactly what I focus on every day. You know, I walk around and, you know, drive around and I look at everybody's face. It's like, is that them? Is that the missing person? You know, it's become to the point where, you know, I have to help, you know, and just giving, posting these flyers, you know, it's, I'm hoping the community can come together and spread the word, because we cannot do this even as advocates and having, you know, these pages. We can't do it without everybody's help. It takes a second to share the post, you know, and that 1 second, it's just so helpful. It's, you know, it gets the word out there. And just by chance, hopefully somebody sees these. You know, it's very important to do. So if you do have any questions, please, you can message us at Navajo Nation Missing Persons Updates or the Missing Persons of the 21 Pueblos, and we will answer your questions.
Ms. Key, thank you so much. And we'll put links to those Facebook pages on our webpage, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks so much to our guests, Miski Yatsati, Janet Franson, and Jim Walter. We're back tomorrow with another show. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Thanks to Roman Garcia, who engineered our show today. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, providing mini-grants for obesity prevention, improved nutrition, and physical activity. Deadline is August 23rd. More at www.aaip.org. And by Intertribal H2O, offering Enagic water filters from Japan, which alkalize water in homes and offices. Information about their products and testimonials available at intertribalh2o.com.
Keshe, yamisto medical cause alite natu. Look ya olo ikena yamazo dato medicate dato cheap an ati da natu. 1-800-318-2596 and pen an akin. That is medicate.gov in Donawa doa. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Don't know what Ben and Ito look at now. Ella, qua.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.